you can buy a property each time that creates one or two bedrooms, you're certainly creating that growth instantly rather than waiting for the market to grow.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies.
I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with international property investor Sam O'Connor. Growing up in New Zealand, he has been surrounded by and involved in property investment his whole life. Keep listening to find out more about his story, strategies to expanding the portfolio, as well as some of the ups and downs of his journey so far. O'Connor has been involved in property investing essentially his whole life.
I'm originally from New Zealand, been working in property investment as a family trust for a number of years, almost as young as I can remember. Started getting heavily involved in my teenage years, throughout university, and have carried on through with property investment into my adult life.
Having lived and invested in New Zealand for so long, O'Connor only recently made the move to Australia and worked his way up to continue his investment journey.
Recently, I've moved over from New Zealand to Australia. So my property investment journey has been mainly based in New Zealand. Recently moved over to Sydney just over a year ago, and just starting to wanting to replicate the process over here of what we've done in New Zealand. And so the last year has actually been, for the first time in a long time, is working in a day-to-day job in a corporate scene, mainly just for the purposes of meeting the banking requirements to get a loan in Australia. And fortunately, it's taken a year, and I managed to just get the first property in Australia just last week.
He explained some of the reasons why he made the big move to Australia.
I've been in New Zealand predominantly most of my life, and I moved over to Australia just for a bit of a change and also to get into the property investment game over here. Sydney's great. I mean, love the weather, love the people, and lots of great opportunities.
And his assessment of Sydney in particular.
If you look at the metrics of Sydney in terms of weather, employment, growth, just business opportunities, and entertainment, it certainly meets a lot of high benchmarks compared to other cities and countries around the world.
O'Connor grew up in New Zealand and was exposed to business and investment from a young age.
I was brought up just north of Auckland, which is the main city of New Zealand, or the largest city. So I was brought up there, quite an entrepreneurial family. Most of my family have mainly been business owners or entrepreneurs in some sense. And that certainly rubbed off on me from a young age. And when I was very young, I was exposed to the grandparents and also the parents of property investment and business. And from a young age, I was certainly interested in business. And from about 12 years old, and I read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, which is quite a famous book and quite well known. And it certainly struck a chord where, there's a lot of people that sort of work 9 to 5 their whole life until they're 60 and then they retire. And Robert Kiyosaki's book basically stated, if you create an investment or business opportunity, you will have, financial freedom. So you can decide how you spend your time rather than having to work to make ends meet.
He explains the type of entrepreneurial ventures that took place in his family.
The grandparents, for example, were one of the first to introduce motels. Before then, it was hotels and B&B type accommodations. And then also as a family, my parents, they've started the property investment journey. And I've been involved in that as part of the trust, and helped them grow that from when I was around 15 or 16, being involved quite actively. And also when I went to university, I did a Bachelor of Property degree. So I managed to really supercharge the trust portfolio And certainly over the last few years, we've really grown it to quite a substantial size.
While his grandparents were involved mainly in commercial real estate, O'Connor and his family stick to residential with an interesting twist.
That was the grandpa was the first to do that. But in terms of the trust that I'm involved with as a co-owner, that's purely mainly multi-unit residential. It, I mean, from a bank's perspective, interestingly, once you get to a certain size, so we're up to around 46 rental properties now, they do start to classify you as a commercial, especially multi-unit residential. And so it could be classified as a commercial operation, but the property use is residential unit.
O'Connor's family will go up against other investors to purchase these multi-unit residential dwellings.
All purchases have been already built, so it's purely an investment. And the reason for that is obviously development can create much higher yields, but then there's always the risk of, you know, overcapitalizing or budget blowout. So it's always been buy and hold investments. And it started from when I was, quite young at around 10 years old. And then, and I started getting involved at a point from then on. The units, with multi-unit properties, the great thing about it is quite often there is less potential buyers in the market. If you're trying to buy a two-bedroom or a three-bedroom house, there's a lot of potential buyers. There's owner-occupiers, there's investors. But if you purchase a block of units, typically you're only competing with other investors. So we've found buying blocks of units definitely means there's higher yields available. And also there's quite, because they're often investment owned by other investors, quite often they are run down. So there can be great value add-ons by purchasing blocks of units and doing them up.
After being surrounded by all his life, O'Connor decided to study property at university.
It was a four-year degree, and I did a Bachelor of Property. And so the family trust operated quite well. And the benefits I brought on board, which helped a lot more after university, was particularly the law side of things, also the marketing, some accounting as well, but also just the scope of thinking a lot larger. So the Bachelor of Property degree I did was worthwhile, and it included basically development, finance, marketing, construction, and law. So by bringing that academic side to the trust, it certainly helped grow it more substantially.
While still studying, O'Connor took up work opportunities with development companies to expand his knowledge and skill set.
I decided to work for a couple of development companies and investment companies through university holidays. And the reason for that was just to get a little bit more exposure to other entities and how they worked. It was great in terms of understanding more of a corporate nature. So even though I'm not a big fan of corporate type work, I think, you know, there's no harm in working for some of these large investment and development companies and picking out the best parts of it, which you can bring back to your own portfolio.
Even now, O'Connor often makes sure to keep himself educated on the market and legislation that affect him and his business.
I'm also a fan of, doing yearly catch-ups with a solicitor and an accountant. And even if there's nothing specifically to talk about, it's just a generic talk, you know, what new changes have happened in the market, what new legislations might be occurring or about to occur. So I think unless you force yourself to expose yourself to other people's opinions and advice, then you may just stay stuck in your way of thinking.
He describes how his family were able to grow their portfolio and the ways in which they were able to add value to their properties.
The trust has been going since I was 10 years old, and I became involved once I was about 16 or 17. So it's grown from about 10 to about 40, 46 in that time. And that's also through, really supercharging equity. And what we've found, certainly in our last few purchases, is that the easiest way and the quickest way to grow equity, we've found, is by the creation of bedrooms. So quite often, you know, council consents or building consents are not required. But by the creation of bedrooms to a unit, it can, you know, instantly create higher cash flow through rent. And that, you know, obviously means you get a higher equity. So we're able to, you know, refinance and use the increased equity as deposits on more property. And I think it's certainly something that a lot of people don't take into consideration when they view a property. And, you know, so quite often when we walk through a property now, as well as looking at the condition of the property structurally and all that type of thing, it's also looking at, well, is that lounge, you know, big enough to be able to dice off another room? And it may sound quite trivial, you know, it may only add an extra $100 or $200 a week in rent. But at a 5% return, that, you know, that's anywhere from $50,000 to $80,000 in increased equity. So if you can buy a property each time that creates one or two bedrooms, you're certainly creating that growth instantly rather than waiting for the market to grow.
Sometimes there may be barriers to accomplishing this, but it can work quite well for houses.
One of the issues is if you're buying an apartment and you're not buying the whole block, then sometimes there is strata, you know, strata approval is required. But certainly for houses where, you know, you've got sole decision-making power, then the creation of bedrooms is certainly something that people should really focus on if they are looking to, you know, wanting to get cash flow properties and instant equity gain.
Coming up after the break, hear more about why O'Connor started his investment journey.
I have always had a very strong interest. So from a very young age, it's always been, you know, reading the property magazines, the property books.
The role he plays now in his family's ventures.
It's certainly my father and myself seem to be the ones that do most of the sort of work.
As well as how and why O'Connor keeps himself educated all the time.
There's different ways of doing things that may not have been possible 6 months ago or a year ago.
All that and much more coming up next. I'm Tyrone Shum and you're listening to Property Investory. O'Connor has always been drawn to studying and working in property due to his keen interest in his family's ventures since childhood.
I have always had a very strong interest. So from a very young age, it's always been, you know, reading the property magazines, the property books, and quite often when it's, you know, even when I'm on holiday, that is the type of information that excites me. It's never too healthy, but sometimes, you know, if it's 1 a.m. in the morning and I wake up, I'll start scrolling through listings online to see what's available. So I think, you know, naturally, I've always had a passion, and it just so happened that you know, the family business was also involved in that. But also, you know, I think a lot of people are usually are quite interested in what their parents have done, and quite often continue in that field. And that certainly for me has happened.
These days, himself and his father play key figures in their family trust and portfolio.
My father looks after quite a few of the repairs and maintenance and renovations and refurbishments, more as a project manager role, so sort of overseeing the people that come in and get things done. And my mother's a little bit more hands-off. She sort of has a more day-to-day type role. And then my other sibling is not involved at all. So it's some involvement, but it's certainly my father and myself seem to be the ones that do most of the sort of work and most of the investigations in terms of purchasing and new purchases.
O'Connor shares a story about learning to invest with your head rather than your heart.
In the earlier days, you know, maybe having emotion rather than, you know, dealing based in it purely on figures and demographics. So, you know, one purchase was a beautiful spot, which was, it was beachfront property, and you know, as a property, very nice. But surprisingly, that's always, you know, not had a very good yield, and you know, properties near the CBD even though they may not be as nice to look at, have always performed a lot better. So certainly, you know, not looking into demographics and infrastructure projects in the area, and closeness to amenities, including schools and certainly the CBD in the early days. And so certainly now it's a lot more location based rather than what looks nice or what's beachfront or what the character of the home looks like. It's a lot more, I suppose, investment business focused rather than emotional.
He further explains how he learned this lesson.
It was a two-bedroom home, and you know, as a lot of coastal properties do, because they are desirable for people to live in, quite often the value compared to the yield is, you know, the yield's usually very, very low, and this was the case. And it was also a property where, you know, there was no value creation. So it was so small that, you know, our usual criteria where we can add bedrooms wasn't possible without having to go through a massive, you know, consenting process. And I mean, the yield now, it's because over time, you know, over 15 years now, it has become to a point where, you know, it's cash flow positive and it looks after itself. But for quite some time, you know, there was very little growth in terms of yield, and you know, that certainly can hinder being able to purchase more properties quickly.
At the time, capital growth wasn't as stable in this suburb as perhaps it was closer to the CBD.
Over the long term, it has had capital growth, but of course, when the market goes quiet, so in the early days when the market was a bit quieter and it wasn't in the boom time, then you know, the property quickly dropped in value. And so, you know, if we'd purchased more closer to the CBD, there wasn't as much fluctuation. And it's a bit like fair sections, you know, quite often when the market does slow down or a bit of a downturn, quite often sections are one of the first properties to drop in value, and quite often also coastal properties, because that, you know, quite often coastal property is seen as more of a luxury rather than a necessity.
O'Connor shares a positive moment that he feels changed his trajectory on his journey.
I think one of the best moments is that I can recall is, you know, really having an intensive talk with a solicitor and really structuring things in the best way possible to make things so they were as safe as possible, so limiting risk as much as possible, but also in a way where, you know, if we were getting more loans from banks, that, you know, they weren't getting as much equity or security over the properties as they'd like. So, you know, a solicitor can certainly, well, a solicitor in our case certainly helped us in terms of making sure we had the right ownership structures, but also making sure that we knew exactly which mortgages bank, you know, which mortgages the bank held over certain properties, and we could move mortgages around to release equity in other properties if we wanted to.
He emphasises how getting himself educated was really important to move forward.
I think, you know, and quite often, unless you seek information, you won't find it. So, you know, there's a lot of investors, for example, or home buyers that buy properties in their own name. And quite often it might be a lot more better to have it in a trust for either tax reasons or to, you know, make your asset more secure from creditors. So, you know, I found started listening to podcasts, reading a lot more magazines as well. Quite often, you know, a lot of these magazines, you know, they do mention, you know, ways of making things more efficient. So basically just through education, forcing myself to learn more and taking action on what I'd read and learned.
O'Connor has very specific professionals that he turns to regularly for advice.
I'm always of the belief that, you know, to regularly be in contact with both an accountant and also a solicitor. And the reason for that is, even if everything's good now, you may find in 6 months' time there's better things that can happen, especially because the laws are changing all the time. There's different ways of doing things that may not have been possible 6 months ago or a year ago. And, you know, I've certainly spent a lot on lawyers and solicitors, But in the long run, what we've paid them compared to what we've either saved or managed to create in value far exceeds that cost.
Yet these aren't the only professionals O'Connor looks to for advice when it comes to purchasing.
I think, you know, for someone to you know, to get approval and to go buy a property, I mean, it's a good achievement, but it's not rocket science. I think, you know, it's finding the right property that's going to meet your long term goals. Most people's goals are, you know, increase in income from the property and increase in the value of the property. So that due diligence is very important. And you know, for some people, either A, they don't have the time to do that because they're working so much in their day-to-day job, or two, they're just not willing to do it because of the work involved or possibly the ability to do the research. So, you know, the property I've just purchased last week in Sydney, you know, I used a buyer's agent for that property. And even though it cost me about $12,000 to use this buyer's agent, this buyer agent, you know, they really knew the demographics of the areas. They knew how many properties in a certain suburb were renters versus owner occupiers. They knew future infrastructure projects that were happening in the area in terms of transport. They knew the demographics of the type of people that lived there. So were they unemployed, or were they workers? What their incomes were, where they were from, and also past history of suburbs. So what has been the growth over the last 40 years, for example, per annum on average. Those are the sort of things that I look at. But if I don't know a certain area very well, then, you know, I'm willing to pay for that advice to get someone that really does. So it's about, I suppose, you know, spending money to make money. And not just going in blind, because you know, it can be very easy to go buy a property in, you know, some place 50k out from the CBD or the city, and you just don't see any growth for 10 years, or worse still, you know, someone that goes and buys in a mining town where it goes negative equity and they can't rent the place out. So I certainly think if you're not willing to do the due diligence yourself, then don't, you know, you should pay someone that really knows this stuff.
Join us on a future episode of Property Investory, where we continue the conversation with Sam O'Connor to learn more about his investment strategies.
The first property is typically always the hardest, and then it slightly gets easier and easier as time goes on.
Information about his portfolio.
So the total portfolio is probably around the $10 million mark.
As well as the best advice he could give to others.
I think number one is being ethical and honest. You know, the world's a very small place now.
And that's next time on a future episode of Property Investory.